Good morning. I'm calling the House Education Committee meeting to order. It is Wednesday, February 11th, 2026, and the time is 8:04 a.m., right on time, sorry. Okay, members present are Representative Elam. So sorry. Do I need to repeat all that? Okay, great. Members present are Representative Elam, Representative Dibert, Representative Schwanke, Representative Eichheit, Representative Underwood, Co-Chair Story, and we're joined today by Representative Freer, who is an alum and has a student currently at Mount Edgecombe. Thank you for joining us, and I am here. I am Co-Chair Rebecca Himshute. We have a quorum to conduct business. I would like to remind members and folks in the audience to silence your cell phones, and we are in the Betty Davis Committee Room 106 in the State Capitol Building in Juneau, Alaska. The documents for today's meeting have been distributed to members, are available on the table outside the door, and are on basis. We did have an updated slide that came in at 8:01. It came in this morning, and so we've provided that to members. It's on the table outside and has been or will be updated on basis. Okay, and it just had one small change to it. So I'd like to thank our recording secretary, Kale Brown, and our moderator from the Juno LIO, Doug Bridges. And our committee aides, Tammy Smith and Ella Lubin. Grateful for all your help today. Our agenda today is one item. We're going to get a status update from Mount Edgecombe High School. We will hear from Commissioner Dina Bishop, Deputy Commissioner Karen Morrison online, and Director Don Hanisch with the Department of Education and Early Development, Mount Edgecombe High School Superintendent David Langford, Advisory Board Member Howard Amos, and current students Caden Cross, and I hope I say this right, Ilana Kalki. There will be one slide deck. You have copies of the slide deck and the one slide that was switched out. I would also, before we begin, like to read some comments that I wrote to kind of frame this meeting that I can't find right now. We have a little bit too much paper going on. Give me one moment. Okay, so I wanted to sort of set the tone for what we're doing here today. So I took some time and wrote some notes, and I'll be referring to my notes to kind of help members and folks in the audience see what we're trying to get done today. Since I've been in office over the past 3 years, we've heard repeatedly from schools across the state. We're hearing about buildings that are literally collapsing. We're hearing about water and sewer systems that are failing. We're hearing about teacher turnover that's the highest in the state's history. And our funding to address these issues has stagnated. Schools across the state are struggling. What sets Edgecombe apart is that when the school struggles, the systems of support other schools enjoy are simply not present. In other school districts across the state, when a tricky hiring decision is made and the community loses faith, a school board member hears about it. When school meals are inadequate, the local school board addresses it. When changes of any sort are made, it's because decisions, sometimes difficult ones, were made by the locally elected school board. The governance structure of Mount Edgecombe High School does not provide a local school board. Rather, there is an advisory board that is appointed by the Commissioner of Education and approved by the State Board of Education. And the State Board of Education is as close to a local board as Mount Edgecombe High School gets. The State Board of Education is comprised of members from each judicial district in the state, as well as two at-large members and a military advisor and a student advisor, all appointed by the governor and confirmed by the legislature. There is no guarantee anyone on this board has any interest in Mount Edgecombe High School, making this board vastly different from a locally elected school board. It also does not say that they don't care. It just says that they aren't from that community and they weren't elected by the families of those students. The other factor that raises the stakes in our conversation today exponentially is that, unlike other school districts, the students at Mount Edgecombe do not go home to family caregivers at night. The responsibility of acting as family for the students at the school is weighty and cannot be overemphasized. It is not typical that concerns within a school district come to the legislature, since we delegate the governance of schools to local boards made of folks from the communities where the schools are located. In the case of Edgecombe, however, we are directly responsible for the safety, quality of life, and well-being of the students. That is why we are here today. Like all school districts across Alaska, Mount Edgecumbe is experiencing rapid changes with impacts to student health, safety, and mental well-being. We are not here today to point fingers or to condemn any one person or any one decision. Rather, we are here to bring facts, transparency, and perspective to the situation. Because Edgecumbe is the only school in the state for which the state is directly responsible, it is critical that the dialogue today is open, productive, and honest. For the committee's awareness, we will view the slides without stopping for questions unless the presenters prefer to have questions as we go. We'll check that. And then we'll try to organize the conversation according to some topics. First topic I'd like to look at after the slides is the governance and organizational chart that we asked for that I don't see in the slides. So I'm not sure how we'll have that conversation, but we'll do it. Enrollment, past and present, student quality of life, student safety, and communications. I think much of what we're about to do today hinges on communication. So with all of that said, grab some different papers here. We're going to go ahead and get started with our presentation. So I'd like to invite our first presenters, Commissioner Dina Bishop, Deputy Commissioner Karen Morrison, and Director of the Division of Administrative Services, Don Hanisch, from the Department of Education and Early Development, and Superintendent David Langford. We can add chairs, or you can switch out, however you'd like to do it. Thank you for making time. We're glad you're here today.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. For the record, my name is Dina Bishop, and I serve as the Commissioner of Education.
My name is David Langford, and I'm the Superintendent of Mount Edgecumbe.
Thank you. And you had mentioned quite a few names. And when we met with you Monday, we have just prepared folks to be able to answer your questions. So the people closest to the ground, we wanted to be able to answer some questions. Mr. Langford and I will be sharing the slides. And then as your questions come up, we'll have appropriate folks come and respond.
Would you like us to ask questions as we go or save them for the end? I guess since you're switching people out, maybe as we go.
Does that work? Madam Chair, okay. Madam Co-Chair, I thought that that would be great, and that way it meets your needs, if that meets the needs of the folks listening.
Okay, so I'll try to pay attention, you guys, this time. I wanted to also mention then we have from NANA Management Services online the manager of residential care, Debbie Little Dog. Oh, I guess is in the room. And then online, I think we have the students, or are they also in the room? Students are also in the room. Everybody's here in person. No.
Madam Co-Chair, no, we have our students in the room, and Debbie Little Dog and the advisory person are online.
Okay. Advisory board person Howard Amos?
Yes, ma'am.
Is online, and then Debbie Little Dog is online, but our students are actually here in the room.
Yes, ma'am.
Caden and Ilana.
Yes.
Okay,
so
thank you.
Thank you with that, and I would like to announce that the State Board of Education does have a graduate of Mount Edgecumbe High School present, board member Pam Dupois, that serves, she serves on the State Board of Education, is a former graduate of Mount Edgecumbe High School. So I wanted to share that with you, that there is a person that is personally experienced this and advocating for Mount Edgecumbe High School. So without further ado, I just wanted to share with the group that I will, the way that we've organized the presentation is kind of to discuss from whence we've come into actions that were taken and decisions made last year and perhaps the impetus for the why, and then allow Superintendent Langford to share this year and some changes that were made, courses for kids, have kids speak to you, and then really be able to address your questions. So we can move to the next slide. So as always with the Department of Education, we like to keep our mission, vision, and purpose before us, and many of you participated in creating this mission, vision, and purpose with the State Board of Education. My favorite is our vision because it's really what we believe we want for kids when they leave public education, when they leave us. And so we always like to keep our eye on that ball because until students are successful after their education, we can't really say that we've done a job well. So for me, I love to know what our students are able to know and be able to do, and that creates our success. The strategic priorities for Alaska's Education Challenge, we like to keep these five priorities before us as well. I believe they were about 18 months in the making, but affirmed on 2018. And you will hear from the State Board just a little snippet for foreshadowing for in March. They did a review, and they will share that with you at the joint meeting. So here's the agenda for Mount Edgecombe. We're going to really give a little history for those that don't have that context. Many of you do. Talking about right-sizing the ship and why some changes were made. There was a request for student enrollment. And please know we have enrollment, student enrollment from OASIS, which is the data that the department would have access to. And then we've also have follow-up data, which is located at the school. And this is true for every district operates that way. We're talking about options, things that went away, things that came back in working towards education. Really, we are going to talk to you about some of the struggles we have and we addressed this year and that continue to remain in regard to facility and major projects and then looking forward. So as one of the first teachers of Mount Edgecombe in 1985, I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Langford to just give that little history to ground us in understanding.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, co-chair, Madam Co-Chair. So, yeah, I just wanted to just go over from the very beginning, you know, where how did all this start? So, obviously, a lot of you know that school started in 1947. I think the first graduating class was 1948, and there's still some people alive that were part of that first graduating class. If you travel anywhere in the state, you will find graduates of Mount Edgecombe, and you will have you'll know people that have a very long history. When I sit and have dinner with students in the cafeteria, I'll say, "Why are you at Edgecombe?" My auntie went there. My grandmother went there. My father went there. It's a long heritage of people that come to Mount Edgecombe. So I call that first phase, that's the first phase of Mount Edgecombe, which ended basically in 1983 when the BIA shut down the school and offered the campus to the state of Alaska if it was reopened with health and education as the focus. So in 1985, we were tasked of building basically a brand new school. Only two of the former teachers that were around in 1983 were actually transferred in. And so basically we're just creating a school from scratch. As the commissioner said, I was the first, actually the first person hired beside the superintendent, and we worked diligently to create everything from the curriculum to what would happen in the dorms to get dorm contractors, everything. So I have a lot of experience with the operation starting in 1985. I left in 1992 and went on to a 30-year career of consulting with businesses, K-12 schools, universities throughout the world, and always had a dream of coming back and helping Mount Edgecombe. That dream sort of, I call that whole phase starting in 1985, phase two of Mount Edgecombe. This is really, to me, the third phase of Mount Edgecombe starting this year. And the reason I say that is because for the first time in decades, basically, we now have new dorm supervision. We have a new cafeteria contractor. We have myself as administration, but a lot of the staff retired last year. And so this is a huge transition phase, and I see this as a great opportunity for the future of Mount Edgecombe to say, now we can remake Mount Edgecombe and bring it back to what it was.
Thank you.
Any questions on that slide? I have one question. Anyone else? Okay. My question on that slide, and is it okay to jump in? Okay. Thanks. When you talk about the third phase and the new dorm and new cafeteria staff and the turnover in teachers, and it's a lot. It's a major change. What precipitated the change in the dorm and cafeteria?
Well, the commission talked to that because she was there last year. And
Madam Co-Chair, this is the next slide. So it's fortuitous that right-sizing the ship about the why that occurred. And so to give a little bit of history for the record, my name is Dina Bishop. And this is best for me to speak at this part because Mr. Langford was not present last year. He was hired and started July 1st. Of 2025. So understanding Mount Edgecombe and what has happened, really, you shared in the beginning of this meeting about schools across Alaska. One of the big major things we've experienced was COVID times. And I do want to share that during that time, quite a bit of revenue was poured into schools. In fact, in the 3 years from 2021 to 2023, Mount Edgecombe did receive $5 million, a little over $5 million. And we will share that in addition. We will share that on Friday. We have a detailed budget meeting, and so we are doing high level now, but you can really drill down into those. And as we move forward, I was hired in 2023, August, and then really that first year that I was here, I really had reports on Mount Edgecombe, understanding Mount Edgecombe, but Mount Edgecombe was not in the news and on, you know, the tips of our tongues like it is today. Beginning in August of 2024, which would be last school year, so not last prior year, prior to Mr. Langford being here, we had our quarter projections, and it was noted that Mount Edgecombe was $1.6 million over their budget the moment that we ran the first payroll. We were able to demonstrate at the first quarter that the payroll and our bills needing to be paid did not have the funds that were going out the door. So with that, we worked and went directly. You know, initially when this happens, it's the business side of the house that goes, talks, where were we? And we understood COVID funds were carried over and utilized for quite a bit of staffing. So not and that happened at many different districts across the state during that time, but they were utilized for staffing, and those staffing positions rolled over. And so we were looking at a problematic because the funding that funded those positions wasn't present. And so when COVID funds expired, we needed to look at the operational cost and personnel contracts. And I wanted to share, I have been a superintendent in two largest school districts. I've done budgets. I'm a math teacher. I believe I have a handle on the formula. I can share everything. But what was different, and the first thing I asked was, let's go look where the money's being spent. I need to see the chart of accounts. And because, as you mentioned, Co-Chair Himshute, this is a state school, the operations as an arm of government operate differently. So you operate on your management plans similar to other districts. The reporting that I could look back on what didn't exist the way it does for other school districts. And that's just the way the system was designed. As you mentioned it at the beginning of this, it's under government, not a local school district reporting system, because the funds are appropriated at your level specifically separately for the dormitory. They do gain their money through the ADM, but it's a very different structure of reporting. So when we looked at that, we had to look at, okay, where are the cost overdrives? That's the first thing you do is go back and say, well, where are the costs? And we did notice an increase in the dorm cost at 24%, and then food service, the ability to feed students, those three meals a day, was up 102%. Granted, inflation during this time was up as well, 6 to 7% a year. The earlier years, not in 2019, but we know during those pandemic years. But the money being spent going out was not it didn't match up. We were spending more. So we started to look at these contracts and really determine where is the money going. And being a that's our jobs as a prudent governmental service servants. We took a look, and we actually, that initial, we sent our ASD, our acting ASD, to go boots on the ground. The same time during this, in the next bullet, there were staff concerns. There was actually they sent it to the state school board, so it was a public document, a letter of no confidence in leadership at the school. So what we did was went there and said, listen to staff. And we had meetings with staff. And initially these were on Zoom. They were just listening sometimes to just individual leadership teachers. But all of these things were happening at the same time. So in December, I couldn't make it there. I was invited. I said, give me a time to come. I'd like to come. The time that they had, I was not available. So I said, but I will get someone there. Our employee went. She was the acting ASD at the time, and she said yes. She toured the facilities, took a look, took some pictures. It's like, yeah, we need to support here. And again, the way the structure goes and how you know about things is things are reported up, that you get information. So we now were boots on the ground going, wow, we need to support this. I took a tour, met staff, met leadership, talked about it, and heard their concerns. Since that time, that first December, we had five subsequent visits throughout. And I personally went and visited the school in January and talked to staff and had a staff meeting, had been on advisory boards invited. And what had occurred during this time, and the staff concerns were real when I talked to them, they asked for a budget. And they wanted to know what it would look like moving in, because we had shared your $1.6 million in the hole. Like, things have to change. We're spending COVID money that we no longer have.
That was January 25?
Correct. Well, January, my personal visit was January 25. That's correct.
But not January 26, not last month. We're talking a year ago.
So from whence we've come, sharing. So we found out that on those on-site visits, we had on-site visit by the state's engineer. We had the deputy. She met with staff individually that wanted to speak. And so we really received some information and knew that how do you get within our means and have a school system. At the time, what alerted me was that there was a recommendation to eliminate 14 teaching positions. And I knew from having run high schools and other things over my time that there's no way that you can have a comprehensive high school with 14 less teachers. And we would not be able to do that. So at that time, there was rumors that it's going to shut down, and the teachers really feared that. And I said, so I went. I was like, no. There's no talk about closing Mount Edgecombe down, and we will work with the administration, superintendent specifically, to get a budget. And so we worked back, and frankly, that work was done by Deputy Morrison, who was a school finance officer in a district, and she worked them through. Because we wanted to know, what is spent on teaching? What's spent on administration? What's spent in another area? And as you know, and you've probably heard from other people who run boarding schools for facilities, that really funding is lacking. And so that has been knowledge. It's been looked at in bills. It's been a group coming. So boarding schools, excuse me, have a very specific issue, with the housing side as well. Excuse me. If anybody has any water, I'd love it. So with that and the planning for this year, this present year, what occurred after all of that, we did go out to bid. If the dorm vendor was the best service, that's what we wanted to know. Thank you so much. So we did take the dormitory and look. What we noticed was that some positions that were originally the dorms during the pandemic time when we had money were moved over to the state side. And so we wanted, but in the contract.
You need to understand state side. I've heard this said before with Edgecombe. When you say dorms and then state side.
Yes, ma'am.
What's the distinction?
So that's a great question. The vendor that we have, last year it was one vendor. This year it's another vendor. And they have employees. And their employees partner with the state employees, which is Mount Edgecombe teachers, Mount Edgecombe boarding school staff. So we do have staff in the dorms. But a majority of the kitchen supports and other dorm supports as well partner with the vendor, and that's been the history. So we went out to bid last year for the services and created a contract where we added in just some of the specifics like laundry services, removed the two of the three positions back into the contract because we felt that they were needed. And other reductions we made for this year was not 14 teachers. It was 4 teachers. There is a true reduction in teachers at the school, 1 administrator, and then 2 administrative support staff. And so that's how we balanced a budget, like every other district did, is look at where can we make the changes while keeping student services in mind, keeping students moving forward. To mind, on FY 2025, the goal when we had to right-size it in the middle of the year when we're flying the ship, the request was we need to start saving as we move through this year, but try to keep this as far away from students as possible. Like, we don't want to affect students. It wasn't their fault that this error was made, so let's just keep going. June and July, just to share, to get up to date, changes in leadership. The former superintendent did resign. She wanted a different part. She was wonderful and loved the culture of the school and really moved that. But, you know, she decided, you know, this isn't what I really want to do. I'm going to choose something else to do. And at that time, David was hired as a superintendent leader in organizing around Mount Edgecombe and its needs. The dorm principal after the school year started, and the dorm principal is an employee, was an employee of the state. He resigned, and I believe he retired. And then 2 other critical dorm positions followed him. Like leadership happens, his team left as well. And at this same time, we did transition to a new contractor for dorm and the kitchen, and then like deep cleaning and upgraded some needs that we found when we were at the school during this transition. So it wasn't the best of planning with transition. There was no expectation that or understanding that the dorm principal would leave. But that person chose to leave, and then the dominoes happened. And so we had to hire quite a few people. So if you think about some of the challenges this year that they've gone through is hiring people, number one, that late in the season, and then also learning new processes, learning new procedures. And it was actually the students who helped, like, get that back to this is what we were used to and this is what we would like to do. So this was a lot. I tried to sum up those changes the best way, but I know there's probably more questions, and I'm happy to answer any before we move on.
Right. We'll probably have to move a little faster going forward, but this was a very dense slide. Representative Story, Co-Chair Story.
Thank you, Co-Chair Himshute, and welcome, Commissioner and Superintendent Langford. I had a question about the changes in leadership, and I had been reading a few articles and the SICA paper, and as a school board, we always are able to go through a hiring process for our superintendent, and I know you have an advisory school board, or I'm not sure of the name, the technical name, and one of the comments was that this didn't go through a typical superintendent hire where you would meet the advisory board. I don't know how those were done in the past, but if you could give me some context about that process this year, that would help me.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Yes, absolutely. So when we did receive the resignation, it was not in the early on. It was the latter part of the spring and moving into and having the change of the dorm as well. The advisory board was not involved. We didn't have a full-scale hiring because of the timing of it. School needed to start. And when we looked at what was at the school and the condition of the school at the time, we needed leadership to come. And when I talked to some people came and shared, hey, I heard about Mount Edgecombe, I'm interested. I did talk to several people during this time and found the reason of my selection for David was the interest from the staff and people at the school that I had talked to, as well as the advisory board, was that we want Mount Edgecombe to be brought back where it was. There was turmoil last year, so it didn't just start this year. It really began last year with that, you know, vote of no confidence. And so we need a strong leader. When I went looking and I knew that Mr. Langford was available and could work, understanding the basically it's a little bit different he is working in Mount Edgecombe, but also supporting another school district. That was a way to, through finances, the board came to me, actually, and had at another school district, and David could probably talk to you about that, and shared this offer about what if we did this. So this idea was brought to my desk.
So let's talk about what if we do this. Yeah. How are you managing two school districts? No other superintendent in the state is doing that. How often are you able to get to your other school sites or to your other school district? How's it working out?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair, I'd be glad to address that. So, last year in February, I interviewed for the Chatham School District and was hired immediately, and happy to go to the Chatham and have a career there, and really liked the whole situation. As spring progressed, I was contacted by former students, former teachers, former parents, or current parents even, from Mount Edgecombe, and they said, "Well, you're coming back to the state of Alaska. Mount Edgecombe needs you, and there are a lot of things happening, and they need your expertise and background, et cetera." So as spring progressed, I started having more conversations. Thanks to Senator Schauer, I got introduced to the commissioner, and I simply started throwing the idea out that I could help in whatever capacity to begin with, and then emerged the idea of could you do both? I said, I think I can do both very well, but really it's going to be up to the board in Chatham because they hired me first, and my allegiance there is first. So I met with the board in Chatham several times and explained the entire situation and, what it would mean for Chatham and Mount Edgecombe and their advantages and their disadvantages with doing that, and basically left it up to the board in Chatham finally in June to meet and decide, and they voted unanimously that yes, they wanted to proceed and allow me to run both districts. So while I'm not physically president in Chatham as I would be as a superintendent, I'm there whenever they need me, and I talk with superintendents around the state every week practically, and everybody agrees 90% of superintendent work now is online. You even have online meetings with people that are in the building at the time. And so it's the same with Chatham, that it's a very, very small district, only 174 students and four schools. And they all know they can contact me anytime, day or night. And in fact, this morning I had two conversations with principals this morning. So I wanted to make sure that Chatham was going to be okay with this, knowing that the state was requiring me to live in Sitka and not live in Angoon. And in order to help them understand, I said instead of having once a year superintendent evaluation, let's do it quarterly. So every 3 months, I meet with the board, and we go over in detail what's working, what's not working, and make adjustments. And so every time, they've said unanimously that this is working well for all of us. So
Chatham being one of the most, by any measure, one of our most at-risk districts in the state, so they would require, I would think, quite a bit of attention. How much time are you on the ground in Chatham?
Madam Co-Chair, not as much as if I was full-time superintendent there. That's absolutely correct. But at critical times, like I was at all four schools, beginning of the school year, I was doing staff training, staff development, working directly with them, getting to know the communities, understanding that. I basically leave it up to the principals in the four schools, tell me when I need to be there. I was just in Tenneke not too long ago. So at first the idea was about, maybe I should try to go once a month or something. But they are the ones that told me that that's really not necessary to actually be on the ground that much time. So,
yeah, some of your schools are in my house district, and I know that there's no direct ferry between them and there's no direct flight between them. So
right. It's
a lot of travel.
Yep.
Can you tell me who's doing your job at Edgecombe when you're not there?
Number of people. The number one person that I work with is Dr. Miranda Baca, who is the academic principal, and she's really the one that, and you'll be able to hear from her later and ask her questions if you'd like, but she's the one that I depend on for the transition, because she's the only one that's was there the last 6 years and can tell me exactly what happened to COVID years, what happened to the process, the budget reductions, staffing, et cetera. And so she's number one. And now we also have a dormitory principal. So right now, Dr. Brock is here and I'm here. And so the dormitory principal is the state person in charge while we're gone. So.
And Representative Freer.
Thank you. Through Co-Chair Himshut to Commissioner Bishop and Superintendent Langford, it's good to see you today. Thank you for allowing me to join you here in education this morning. So I have a couple of questions, and I'll just say, I'll ask them all, then if we can go circle back through them maybe. First, for Superintendent Langford, you had talked about the board talking about some of the advantages and disadvantages of you serving as both superintendent for Chatham as well as Mount Edgecombe. So I'm curious what some of those are. And then I suppose this is a question for Commissioner Bishop. So it's my understanding one individual can't serve as a principal at two different schools. What are the how does this work? What are the mechanics? What allows this type of relationship to exist between Chatham School District and Dean?
I'll address the first question. What are the advantages? Okay. Sitting right here today, this is an advantage. As just the superintendent of Chatham, I would not have access to everybody in the D department that I have access today. And so anytime I have a question or an issue with anything happening in Chatham, from special education to any kind of services or grants, I have direct lines now to everybody in the Department of Education, whereas chances are, as just the superintendent of Chatham, I would not have had these kinds of contacts. And I think that's a huge advantage for the district. And we had a board meeting just last night, and Circle allowed us to use their board meeting. And I'm constantly checking with them. Is everything okay? Is there anything that I need to be doing, et cetera? And they were all very happy about what's happening and the way it's happening. So,
and thank you. Through the co-chair to Representative Freer.
May I?
Would you like me to answer the question or the second part?
Through the co-chair first. So you talked about the advantages. What were the disadvantages that they spoke about?
I think you've already identified it. You know, not being physically present every single day inside the district, I think, is long-term is a disadvantage. And so, you know, we're working through that. But I think the board also recognizes that the advantages have already paid off tenfold over last year, what they had in terms of being able to be in contact directly with the Department of Education. So,
for the second part of the question, through co-chair Himshut to Representative Freer. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You did.
Okay, thank you. Love your new name. I can share that actually many schools in Alaska do share principals. So leadership is shared. And a lot of this has come from the desire to keep the money closest to the classrooms. You've heard time and time again, you've asked to share information about administration, that before we reduce and make changes at the classroom level of the people who serve the students the most, let's look at administration. And so this is a pilot. It is an experiment to look at that. Insofar as being located outside of your district, many of our rural districts have hubs. Some of those hubs are in large rural hubs, say like Bethel. Bethel's that school district has schools all over, Western Alaska, and the superintendent is located in one of them and travels, you know, at different times. Some of the school districts that are all rural have their hubs either in Anchorage or in Fairbanks. So that does, this is a really a, when I asked some of the superintendents that have moved to local districts as well as boards, many of the reasons are for efficiencies and saving on funds, because keeping I believe that closest to the students is best, but when you have to plan on not so many resources, the people that you choose to have closest to the students are those that are in the school. And so districts, we could provide information about, but there are several districts in our state now that operate with district offices that are not located within the boroughs for which the school district is.
So, Commissioner, in the past you have said freedom to try but not freedom to fail. You knew that Edgecombe was already in a fragile state. You also know that Chatham District is not a high-performing district on any measure. And I'm not saying anything bad about Chatham. They just need more help. And yet, it seemed like a good idea to hire one person for two districts that were struggling. I need to understand that better.
Sure. Thank you, Co-Chair Himshute. The experiences of superintendents and leadership matters. At the time, I could have found a brand new person, and I don't think that would have met the need that we see at Mount Edgecombe specifically. There was a need from all over the state, and parents, and I ran into people saying, we need help at Mount Edgecombe. And it was an interest in having experienced leadership, someone who knew the history and the knowledge and the experiences of Alaska and Alaska's people to come back to Mount Edgecombe and having that history. It was also the first time I, when we went through this, I did not feel as though, I said, no, I don't think so. So just so you know, it was a good bargain and a long discussion. And it was, again, the Chatham board who approached me. And the Chatham board wanting to try this because such a small district, having a superintendent, it's difficult to get a superintendent. We all know the salaries of superintendents. They're very hard jobs. You know, you get called in front of here even. And so I think at the Chatham, it was a willingness to feel like they could make it done. The services that they needed from their superintendent, they wanted at the administrative level. Where they wanted to put their resources was in the schools. They didn't want to cut from the schools to have a full-time superintendent. I was looking for a superintendent with experience who knew what trouble we were in. And given at the time that we would have two people on the ground in Mount Edgecombe that could move us forward, number one, the principal of the school was not changing. And at the time of the hire of Mr. Langford, the principal of the dorm was still there. So we had the continuity of leadership and that we could work together. Additionally, for me, it was academics, academic success. I wanted to see Mount Edgecombe and their outcomes grow from whence they've come, and they weren't at a place that people were happy, and so moving that forward as well. So those things did come into my decision-making. Having a new person at Mount Edgecombe who had no superintendent experience, even full-time, may not have had the experiences that you need in working with staffs, working with conflict, working with new vendors. Specifically speaking, when we have new folks in such a complex organization that who didn't understand finances and understanding the business side of the house, which is the experience of superintendents, that's a large part of our jobs. We ran into financial problems. So my experience from working with this and looking at it was that we needed someone with a strong business background as well that had run and understand those finances. So, you know, when you're asking me about really specifically and directly, those are some of the thoughts I had, but it wasn't made overnight. In fact, I think those folks in the meetings can share. I said, no, there are high needs, there are. And when it was brought back about, no, we... Because my thing was like, no, you would have to live here. This is where you live. This is where you are, you know, every day. You can travel if you need to. And so we worked out some of those issues. But you will see that many superintendents don't spend as much feet on the ground in their own local places in their schools as much as really the Mount Edgecombe superintendent can, because he lives about a couple blocks away from the school.
And before I give the next question over to my colleague here, well, I have a lot of questions about that. So Was the advisory board consulted prior to hiring? Is that typical?
Madam Co-Chair, I believe that the State Board of Education, I spoke to the State Board of Education at this time, and I was working with the advisory board in settling the budget and other issues, and then time passed, and I needed someone on the ground by July 1. And so the final decisions were really made in that June month that we could move forward, and hiring in our state was difficult. We did open the job, but the applications that I had were not long-standing experienced people, great people, but knowing that there were issues at the school already, and knowing that the issues were caused by truly a lack of understanding of planning and management, that I needed that strong background, which comes from an experienced person.
And I hope you can understand the concern that we have for a decision to basically consolidate two districts, at least the administration. So it's something we need to really understand. Representative or Co-Chair Story?
Thank you, Co-Chair Himshut, through the chair. When I think about principals, I think about them as our instructional leaders. And when we look at research besides teachers, it's the principals who can really help with student achievement, because they can help teachers network together, look at several different things that really improve instruction. And, of course, Cluckwan and Gustavus are part of Chatham District. And in talking to board members, I know one of their main things was saving money. And that was one of the advantages to the Chatham School District, why they did this. As I think about this, and this is kind of the tragedy about saving money, because we do want to focus on student achievement, and I don't like, shortcuts that way, especially when I think of the needs. And so it's 100, you said it was 174 students, but they're from four unique communities that communities really impact the schools too. So my concern is, you talked about Chatham School District doing this superintendent evaluation, three times or more frequently. And so I'm hoping that's true with the advisory council or whoever at Mount Edgecombe was superintendent evaluations. And I'm concerned because I just heard the state board was responsible for picking the superintendent. And it would be nice to, because before I thought it was the advisory council at Mount Edgecombe who did that. So it'd be nice the board to know in regulation who is responsible for typically doing a superintendent search for Mount Edgecombe. And then is the plan to do frequent evaluations with the state board or with the advisory council or both as you go forward?
Commissioner?
Yep. Thank you. Through Co-Chair Himshut to Co-Chair Story. That's a great question. And the advisory board and information and the way it's set up is really to advise the state school board. So they do, when new members come up, they give names, for curriculum, other activities that they'd like to see in the school. So it is an advisory board to provide information to the state school board. But the state school board is responsible for the approval, similar to local school boards, in approving hiring. And so that is how that occurs. And I'm not sure your second question, and really in regard to principalship, you're absolutely right. Research demonstrates that the leadership in the building is the second most important after the teacher. So I'm not sure if that question was directed about your two small schools in your area. Did you have a question for Mr. Langford?
I just follow up.
Chair Story,
follow up. Yes, thank you. Through the chair, my question was about how frequently are you doing super evaluation of your role at Mount Edgecombe, since I know you're doing it more frequently with the school districts in Chatham? And my point on the principal is I'm concerned that while we have strong principals at all those places, that they're not getting as much time to focus on student instruction because their superintendent is not available. And so there was two questions. How frequently are you doing the evaluation? And then how are you giving support to those principals so they can do their instructional work and not be involved in superintendent duties?
Well, very similar to Mount Edgecombe, the situation I inherited in Chatham was a mess, and primarily financially. So while they weren't $1.6 million in the hole as Mount Edgecombe was, they had a deficit of about $300,000. So the immediate need was to get them financially corrected again. And it was more to years of neglect than anything in Chatham, where people were not focusing on finances, et cetera. We were lucky enough to find a very good person in the CIRC system that is now our financial manager for Chatham, and she's just been fantastic and fantastic partner with me getting the organization back on its feet. I can tell you how bad it was the first 3 months. We were holding checks because we just didn't have the money. We didn't have the income to pay things, and so, of course, vendors didn't like that, and we paid all the employees on time, but and now we're to the point where we're paying things on time, and when I inherited the district, I was getting bills that were 2 years old, vendors wanting to stop payment or stop using services, and so anytime you take over a school district, you don't get to work with the team you want, you get to work with the situation you inherit. So,
just follow up, and I know we want to move on. There's plenty of questions. Follow up, thank you. But still my question about how frequently are you doing the superintendent evaluations for Mount Edgecombe?
I am a state employee, and I answer directly to the commissioner, and I'm part of the state employee evaluation process, SPIRE, and we've already gone through one cycle, and we'll go through another one. So,
Commissioner?
Yeah, thank you. Through co-chair Hemshute to co-chair Story. So the formal evaluation does occur once a year, and specifically in the state structure, because it is different. We call him a superintendent, but he's actually a director. I do those evaluations. All directors for hire are approved by the State Board of Education in our policy and bylaws. But I would say that I am in direct contact, probably speak more to David as a director than other directors, and weekly updates and concerns when they're shared are communicated, and expectations for resolution. So formal evaluation, similar to the state, the way that the state system operates for all its employees, and then, of course, touches every week to understand, even given the concerns of students and staff in the community, to move the school forward.
And I just want to remind you, accountability is the most important thing in our schools, and so we're hearing a lot about historical situations. We also need to hear what's happening going forward. How are we fixing it? How are things getting better?
Madam Chair, we would love to move forward. Okay. We have this
Before
in our
we
presentation.
Do, Representative Schwanke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to be quick. Commissioner and Superintendent Langford, I just want to point out, I think it's really important that we recognize the difference between small districts and large districts. I'm well aware of small districts and superintendents that are in charge of small enrollment numbers, sometimes less than 200. And we need to be cognizant of the fact that some of these large districts, a superintendent might be in charge of several thousand students. And so delegation of authority is absolutely part of the job. And I think that that goes for small schools, too. So Representative Story kind of already asked somewhat of my question, but as far as the savings, and you somewhat answered it, obviously there was a budget shortfall in Chatham that partially got filled with this. So I was kind of curious, how do you, you said you have four schools. Are there four principals, or are there shared principal duties and lead teachers? Because in several of my districts, we have shared principals and we have lead teachers in the smallest schools. And as long as they are a strong leader, it works.
Thank you, Langford. Representative. That's also exactly why I thought this could work, because in Chatham they do have, at the two largest schools, they have full-time principals, and they're very experienced people that have been there a very long time. And when I interviewed them and they interviewed me, I put it to them about how this would work, and we worked together. And so far, that's been working fantastic. Those are the two largest schools. Cluckwan has always been in a precarious situation because there's number of students is just so small. Right now they only have about 16 students, but there was a situation where they were able to get a head teacher that acts as the principal and is also a teacher there, and so I've been working directly with him, you know, almost on a daily basis to do whatever we need to do with that school. In Tinakee, their school enrollment dropped below the
the state limit to actually have a school. And so when I came on board, the idea was, should we sell the school? Should we move on? What should we do? I got behind it and started working with a director that was there before, and we established that as a correspondence school. And so today I'm really excited that they're up to 43 students, and they've saved the school. And we have a half-time director right now, but we're hoping as that correspondence system grows, we can keep the school operating until we do get more babies born in Tinicky and can get to the point where we can have a full-time teacher there. So the situation is looking really good, and I was really thankful that the district had faith that they could save the school, because when I came on board, it looked like they were going to close it down completely. And when I went to visit Tinicky, I was amazed. That's one of the places, that amazing small school built purposely for that community. And it's really, you know, sad that they don't have enough kids to have a full-time teacher, but this is the best option. So
thank you.
Elam?
Thank you. Appreciate you coming out and sharing with the presentation here. I guess I'm just kind of looking to see if maybe you can help me understand the difference between the role of superintendent and principal at Mount Edgecombe. My school district is one of the larger ones, KPPSD, and so we've got just over 40 schools, and so we have structurally, you know, a superintendent, assistant superintendents, principals over a variety of schools. How do you delineate the path between being a superintendent and then the role of a principal? It seems to me like, you know, in many of the places we have, people wear a lot of hats in some of these. I mean, now you go to some of my schools and staff members kind of have a hat rack of hats. And so how does that separate out between principal and superintendent?
Yes. Thank you.
Superintendent Langford.
Through the chair. Yes. At Mount Edgecombe specifically, because of the uniqueness of what it is, there is an academic principal primarily responsible for the academic building. Then there's a dormitory principal primarily responsible for everything that's happening in the dorm. So the co-chair mentioned earlier, you know, what is state staff? So it's very unique in that we have a contractor that actually runs the dorm. Nana Corporation actually has 49 employees 24 hours a day that run the dorm. But we also have state staff there that are responsible for wellness, a lot of student activities, recreation, all those kinds of things. And so we have a dormitory principal there. So we meet as an administrative team, myself, the dormitory principal, the academic principal, and make decisions on the whole for the school. And when one of us is gone, the other one's in charge. So,
may I follow up?
Quick follow up.
So how much of your time is spent at Edgecombe being a superintendent versus wearing those other hats? Or do you have that all allocated out?
The first semester was all spent in just riding the ship with Edgecombe, from cleanliness to food service to all kinds of things. Just this semester, I've started to do a lot more staff development myself. And now started every Monday, I meet with the academic staff, starting on a school improvement process, and then bringing 30 years of consulting with schools and training to slowly start to get the academic staff trained, et cetera. And the same thing at the dormitory. We're starting dormitory training with their staff and improvement, et cetera. And how much of my time? Really, the academic principal is in charge of that building, and they are the authority in that building. So I work with Dr. Miranda Baca to make decisions about the building, et cetera. But I defer to her that, you know, this is your school, and you're in charge of the school, and she's a very capable person for that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. And Representative Eichheit?
Thank you, Co-Chair Hibshut. Through the co-chair to Superintendent Langford, thank you for being here. I just want to understand something about accountability. It's something we hear a lot in this building about accountability. So my work with superintendents and school boards is you know, I see the superintendent as kind of the general of the school district, but the school board, the elected school board, hires that superintendent. And so there's layers of accountability there, and I, as a voter in a school district, can hold school board members accountable with my vote besides public testimony, so on and so forth. So in your scenario where you are with Mount Edgecombe, where's the accountability given the current model of an elected school board and a essentially appointed superintendent?
Well, through the co-chair, yes. We have advisory board meetings. I think it's every other month we have an advisory board meeting, and I do come to them for advice and everything from how many credits a management could have to things that are happening in the dorm and what is their advice. Ultimately, our board is the State Board of Education, so to me that's the accountability factor that if there's something not going well, et cetera, it's the State Board's responsibility to let us know what changes need to be made. So.
Follow up.
Sir, I have very low power over who serves on the State Board of Education, so I'm still a little perplexed about the accountability. And, you know, it is talked about in this building, and I just don't see it here. So with all due respect, advisory boards are advisory. Thank you.
I could add to that. Representative Freer. Thank you, Co-Chair Himshut. I think I have a follow-up question to both Representative Eichheit's question, and then I have a separate question. Thank you, through the chair. In local school districts, the board approves the budget. So if you're setting the budget, or it's the superintendent's responsibility to balance out the numbers, who has that oversight? I'll pause there, but I do have another question.
At Mount Edgecombe?
Yeah.
Okay, through the co-chair. Yes, I work directly with DEED and all of the resources that they have to help set the budget, et cetera. I had no input over the budget that I inherited July 1. My job is this is your budget and you're to stay within it, and that's what the superintendents are tasked with and moving forward. Commissioner can speak more about that.
Co-Chair Himshut to Representative Freer. During this time last year of working through this, again, the issue that came before us was the teachers' primary concern was that they wanted to see the budget. In reviewing what had been done in the past, for the past 3 years, there was never a budget presented to the advisory board. The former superintendent had one, and so we worked with that advisory board sharing information regarding, you know, the budget. What we discovered and the manner in which money is appointed at the state level and then it just literally operates differently on a separate system than at a school district level. One of the things, and so the accountability that you see and many of the changes were made due to that, is that when we did investigate at the school level, many of the I guess business practices that are expected through the accounting practices were not being followed. So we additionally shored those up in so much as, which is really great when you have money. Here's an example, you know, for purchase orders, there were 13 different books going out to get purchase orders without a management of an inventory. And so you really didn't know who was in charge at the time of purchasing, and it was really kind of local. This is what I need, and this is what I always had. This is so we, in any school system that you know that is successful, and as Representative Aisha talks about accountability, at the school level, when we looked at the management of resources, we found that it needs more accountability, that we needed to have an oversight. And so that's when we began planning with the superintendent about a budget. And then the local level, really, additionally, the principals and, you know, had some leeway and recommended this is what we'd like to keep, this is what we have. Of course, you take your major expenses off of that about your you know, energy, electricity, things like that. So when you talk about that, I absolutely agree with what this board is sharing about the accountability that was needed. And hence, I want to go back and share the reason that it was changed was practices, business practices, management practices, managing projects, things like that. We just needed to support the school a little more in that area and hopefully have that more transparent for the people who work in the building so that they know where their funds are going, as well as parents and students.
Follow-up. Thank you. Through Co-Chair Himshute and to Commissioner Bishop, I suppose, we talk about the changes in leadership and the need for an experienced superintendent. Mr. Langford spoke about, you know, the different phases and how he was a part of the original when the state took over in 1985, and I appreciate that experience. He was there for 7 years, it sounds like,
yes.
From 85 to 92. That was 34 years ago. So that's a 34-year period where I was a student at the time, so I'm familiar with what the phases were back then or what it looked like, you know, 20 years ago, 17 years ago. And Mr. Langford also spoke about being a consultant maybe out of state for 30 years. I understand there was maybe a lapse in certification within the state of Alaska for a period of time. But Commissioner Bishop, you spoke about experienced superintendent. And so I'm curious, Mr. Langford, I understand you have a Type B. Do you have superintendent experience out of state, outside of consulting, or do you have your superintendent endorsement?
Yes, I have through the co-chair. Yes, I have a superintendent endorsement for the state of Alaska. And yes, I was a superintendent in California for 3 years and I ran a district in Los Angeles and learned a ton about dealing with situations there. But I've also consulted and worked with almost every community in Alaska in the last 30 years. I've been from Kotzebue to all kinds of places throughout Alaska trying to help schools improve. So I've never lost touch with the state of Alaska and what's happening here. So when this opportunity emerged, this is really my third career. And I only put my hand up because I thought I could help, and I think that's happening. So,
sure that everybody is here to help. We need to take a quick Eddie's. One of the documents we had asked for has arrived, and so we need to take a quick Eddie's to distribute that. So we're Eddie's. All right, we are back on record. We're going to take one more quick question from Representative Underwood, and then we're going to try to expedite a little bit. Lots of people took the time and effort to get here, so we want to make sure we hear from them. Representative Underwood.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Pardon my voice. It's trying to come back. But thank you for being here today. I just wanted to touch on the fact, I know we're talking about accountability, and we're talking about state boards, and it sounds like the structure of this is not Mount Edgecombe has an elected regular school board like normal districts do. You guys have the state board, but with all due respect to my colleague from Anchorage, I know when it comes to accountability for state board, we as a legislature actually vote on and approve who's on that state board every year. So we do have a say on who is on the state board. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you. And I think we will move forward. We did receive the org chart, the organizational chart that we had asked for. And one really quick question is, in a school district, you're going to normally see a school board somewhere on your org chart. So how does that work on this org chart? Where is the advisory board? Where is the state board on this chart? And I'm not sure the chart has been uploaded yet to BASIS. We just received it during the presentation. So it will be uploaded shortly after we finish here this morning. Can you explain where the advisory and state boards would fall?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And I'll be very quickly. So the org chart that we had is the state's org chart for each departmental unit. So this is the organization for the departmental unit. The state school board, they are not employees of the state, so they serve to govern. So the state school board governs. Basically is my boss. They select and they select the commissioner, and I answer to the state board. So the state board, similar to local boards, selects a superintendent. So you could say that I'm the commissioner. I'm under that state board at that level. And then one of the divisions of DEED is Mount Edgecombe. Back in 1985, it was placed this way. The state board does request, just so you know, updates from all divisions in the departments. So that's the accountability there. Mount Edgecombe as a division would have to report up. The Alaska Council on Post-Secondary Education, ACPE, is a division. So understanding that LAM is a division. So those all are fed up and reported to the state board. But insofar as management, that's under the commissioner. The advisory board serves as an additional board to the State Board of Education to provide guidance. And there is a member of the State Board of Education on the Mount Edgecombe Advisory Board. So that is our chair, Sally Stockhausen, and she is the representative. She's now the president of the state school board, but she was also for a few years the school board person that was assigned to the advisory board. So she participates in both boards and keeps that communication.
Okay. Very quick question, Representative
yes.
Elam.
Just trying to understand a little bit about why Edgecombe is different than other REA districts. Why does it go to the state directly instead of being an REA district?
Sure. Quick response, through, please, Commissioner.
Through the co-chair, Himshute, to Representative Elam. Back in 1985, and as you know, Mount Edgecombe served students from around Alaska. And so it was not from the time, it was a BIA school originally, so it was run by the federal government. And when it shut down, and it shut down because of overrun of costs and things like that, if you were here and read the research, they shut it down at the federal government. And there was this outcry to bring it back, and the action was made at the legislative level to do it in this manner. It is funded, if you will, as an REAA in so much as the AADM or the ADM, our funding mechanism for average daily membership, is calculated the same way as an REAA because the local Sitka government and homeowners do not support through taxes, Mount Edgecombe and all. So it is, while it's located within that Sitka borough, it operates as an REAA, and this was the structure that in 1985 they could move through the legislative process to be able to assign it. And so all of those assigning of where this school would be was done at the legislative level back in the 80s, and they placed it under the Department of Education, under the commissioner, under the state school board.
Thank you.
Okay, to be really clear, the advisory board would be a board, if we were to map that out, the state board would be here at the top, and the advisory board would be under the state board giving advice to the state board.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Or to their side. Okay. They're not their bosses, but they, yes, ma'am.
Okay, we need to move on. We're not going to make it through all
we'll
the slides.
We'll go very, very quickly, and Madam Co-Chair, we'll run through, and then we can answer questions at the end. So wanted to just share some of the continued questions that were asked of us about different things. We did have a couple of grants that we competed for last spring and did get. One NANA did themselves, and the other one was the Comprehensive Literacy State Development Grant, CLSD. Mount Edgecombe did qualify for that. And then critical positions that we had to fill. We wanted to share these with you because there were changes in these positions. And some folks left the employment of the state. As I shared, the longstanding principal did, he shared in with the advisory board that he retired. And then lots of people who were on his team then decided to take additional jobs too. So this occurred in July when school was to open in a month. And so many of these, but these are all critical positions that were worked to fill very early on. This is student enrollment, Madam Co-Chair, and I know this isn't the detail that you would like. As of Monday, you provided more information for us, so we do have school-level data. Just like, as I shared, the school-level data, just like districts do, they have different data than the department does. In the OASIS count, which is the single identifier, how we fund schools, how we understand who's in them, this is from 2017. We wanted to go back that far just to show pandemic levels. We don't have the last day enrollment for this year, but the blue is the October 1st. So those would be the students that began during the count period. We do have, as you know, it hasn't been a secret, about 100 students have chosen to leave, and we have the detail of that from the principal and Mr. Langford. I'm going to turn it over
to... If we could stop for 1 second there, I need to go back to the enrollment graph. And specifically on February 3rd, we did ask to see the October enrollments, and then we wanted it month by month for a few certain years, specifically to show before COVID, since COVID. What I do want to know on page 8 right now is, what was your enrollment when school started, Superintendent?
402.
402. What is your enrollment today?
311.
So your enrollment today is lower than your end of year enrollment, and we have months to go in any previous year. I think that's part of why we're here today. Mm-hmm. We need to figure out what's going on. We need to figure it out and make it better. So, okay, really quick question from Representative Dybert.
Thank you. Through the chair, just on to either one, maybe Superintendent Langford. This slide, student enrollment, is there a slide? You know, my aunt went to Mount Edgecombe, and she was from a small community on the Yukon River, Tanana, Alaska. Do you have, like, a capture of where students are from with that number of 311, just so we can have an idea of, like, how far students are traveling to go to Mount Edgecombe? And I know my colleague from District 40 has a student there from Utqiagvik. That's a long ways and a long way from home. And just that part of the story is missing as well. Thank
you. Do you want that answer right now in general terms or actual data later?
I'll let you answer.
Superintendent.
Represented through the co-chair. Yes. This year, the count is our students are coming from 110 different communities throughout the state. So as far as the way as the Pribilof Islands to as far north as we can, every community in the state has students that may not be there this year, but have been there in the past. So we have open enrollment for anybody in the state, and primarily the number one place that students come from is places that don't have high schools. So there are many communities in the state that all of their students come to Mount Edgecombe because they just don't have enough to have a high school or don't operate high schools. So,
and Superintendent, if you could also give us a little information of the 100 kids who've left, are they mostly seniors, freshmen? Do you have the data broken down that way?
Madam Co-Chair, I do know that Principal Dr. Baca does have that because I reviewed it. I saw it this morning. She shared it with me. Would you like her to come up or finish this and then have those questions answered?
I think we're going to stop on slide 9. So let's have slide 9, and then we'll have Dr. Baca come up and answer that question, and then we'd like to go to the students since they're here. Does that work?
Yes, ma'am. Their slides are coming up. So
okay. So yeah. Let's go to slide 9.
Yes, just wanted to talk about, you know, where are we headed and how are you riding the ship and what's happening. So the first task as a superintendent is to get the right people on the bus. And we showed you all the positions that resigned after July 1. Many of those people I didn't have a chance to even meet, and they resigned. So my job, number one, was filling all those positions as fast as possible. And because we're part of the State Department, there's a lot of red tape to go through hiring positions. And I saw that as my number one task, is to get those people in those positions. And today we're still looking for, or still hiring one of those positions to get filled. So this year, you know, we've added the Nupiaq language. I have a class called Brave Leadership that I have 6 students in every day, and that's been fantastic, teaching them problem-solving processes and how to improve. And you're going to hear from 2 of them today. We've added shop classes. We have many dual enrollment classes with University of Alaska, and textile classes and 3D art. Our welding program is state-of-the-art because it's a dual enrollment through UAS, and they have the most amazing facility. Probably the biggest problem is we don't have enough space. We fill every seat that they give us through that CTE program. We've also started driver's training this semester and have a number of students involved in that. And pretty extensive career services. I did want to show you just a little bit of the situation that we encountered.
It's okay. We're not going to be going backward. We're going to be trying to go forward right now. So I'm a little concerned on the org chart. I see a vacant security position. I'm not going to go into that right now, but I am kind of curious. So
I've
got to stop myself. So we want to hear from Dr. Baca on the question that we had for her, and then we'll go to the students since they made the effort to get here. So if we could have Dr. Baca come up. Dr. Baca, can you put your name on record and give us your thoughts?
Sure. For the record, my name is Miranda Baca. I am the academic principal at Mount Edgecombe High School. And your question was regarding the withdrawals. Is that correct?
Which grade level was it?
Yeah.
Seniors? Is it freshmen?
Yeah, there is a lot of misinformation out there. So I would like to – I love data, so I have looked that up. The majority of the students that have left of the 100 are female. So about 60 females and 40 males. 34 were freshmen, 29 were sophomores, 30 juniors. So that was pretty much the same, and then 10 seniors. Of the 10 seniors, a few were dismissed. 3 could not graduate because they had failed too many classes. And then I did look at the reasons. So I do interview students when they come to me. There's a form to fill out that they're withdrawing. And when I get that information before they get on a plane, then I meet with them. So we do ask, we do track that. And I will be honest, there was not one consistent theme. There were various reasons, and including 3 wanted to play basketball with their hometowns or villages. The majority were homesick. Some gave no reason. I have some more numbers. I could get them for you. But anyway, there wasn't a consistent theme is what I want to say. So there was some lack of recreation this year. What else? Conflicts with roommates. It is an adjustment for a freshman, especially if you're living in a dorm with 6 people. I know as a teenager, I would have had a tough time with that. So that is a theme that comes up with freshmen. So freshmen, it'll usually be adjusting to dorm life and homesickness. And then 10 were dismissed. I can tell you that for sure.
And Dr. Bach, just one further quick question before we bring the students up. Is that consistent with previous years? You've been there for a while. So this sort of all over the map withdrawal.
Oh, for the reasons?
Yeah.
The number is higher, but the reasons are usually all over. There isn't usually one. But with freshmen, it usually is more homesickness.
And we're hearing something about students feeling overly disciplined. Has that come up, that they feel there are too many rules?
I have not heard that when I speak with them. The one thing that I have heard is they'll say that they feel there's a lack of communication between the new contractors and new dorm admin, and kind of how it was in the past, because they're all new, right? There isn't anyone there that was there last year. So they are expecting it to be the same, and maybe it's not. So they feel like a communication, if that could improve, then that would be better.
Okay. Thank you for that. And I'd like to bring the students up. Do the students have slides, or are they? Okay. Come on up, and we'll put your names on record. And we're really glad you're here. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you could put your name on record, and do you have a presentation, or do you just want to have?
We can just speak.
Okay, great. If you could put your name on record and tell us what you're thinking.
For the record, my name is Ilana Kalki.
For the record, my name is Kaden Cross.
Welcome. We're glad you're here.
So, like I said, my name is Ilana Kalki, and I'm a third-year junior at Mount Edgecombe High School. And I'm here to share my perspective. So one of the biggest things at Mount Edgecombe, as some of you are aware, is the facilities are very out of date. And I think this affects student life, as like there's leaky pipes, washers that don't work, malfunctioning showers. There's examples like there's a leak in girls' main, especially the main dorms. And this isn't just the dorms, but also the academic building. There's like leaks in classrooms and the library. But something that I've seen with the staff communication is like the disconnect between the NANA staff and the state staff. It seems like they have a trouble communicating, which impacts, this leads to like inconsistent application of rules. Sorry.
Take a deep breath. We're not in a hurry, and we're really happy to hear from you.
Like at the beginning of the school year, there's something where we can check out like a lounge, and that wasn't across all dorms. There's been trouble like communicating, getting rides, and just like less collaboration, which has to do with also has affects rec activities.
And we value your 3 years of experience at the school, so it's helping us to see what's changed. So thank you.
Yeah, this just wasn't something that I noticed in previous years, like the disconnect between the communication between the contract and the state staff. But I still do feel that Edgecombe is a place where we can get a higher education. That's why I came to Mount Edgecombe, was to get that higher education. And I feel that Mount Edgecombe students feel more like they feel happier when they're involved in the sports that we have. Like, I know I participate in many sports, and I know that I feel happier when I have these sports and there's things that for me to do. And there's a lot of positive things. Like, I'm in that dual enrollment class for Ed 111, the Teaching for Alaska's Futures, and there's the dance groups, the volunteering communities. So, and I think when people go to Edgecombe, they build friendships and a community that will last them for their entire lives and connect them throughout the state. And so I was wondering, like, if Edgecombe is continued to, like, to withhold the standard to produce the future leaders of the state, like, what can we do to improve that? Thank you.
Thank you for your time, Ilana. You did great.
Sorry.
Okay, and Kaden, if you could put your name on record and then share your thoughts with us.
For the record, my name is Kaden Cross. I kind of have a sort of speech, I would say.
We're ready for you.
All right. My name is Kaden Cross. I'm from Koyuk, and I'm a sophomore at Mount Edgecombe High School here on behalf of MHS. Coming from a small village school, stepping into MHS felt like stepping into a place where everyone moves fast and works hard. You can't hide at MHS, literally and figuratively. You rise to the level of the people around you. It challenges you, it values you, and it inspires you, the same way our school motto says. I didn't expect to be in front of you today. I didn't expect to be representing my school here in the Capitol, but MHS is the reason I walk into places like this with purpose. In just a few months, I've grown more than I thought possible, and I've watched my classmates grow too. Students from all over the state come to MHS carrying whatever experiences experiences and struggles they had before they arrived. MHS doesn't create those problems. It gives us a place to face them and to build something better for ourselves. That's why support for MHS matters, not just for us, but for the whole state. Alaska is facing declining enrollment, rising needs, and a future that depends on our next generation being ready. MHS is already producing future educators, leaders, and contributors to Alaska's communities. But we can't do that without stable funding for staff, updated facilities, student activities, and real maintenance, especially maintenance, which is stretching very thin right now. I'm not here with data charts. I'm here as one student who moved from a small village to a school that changed my trajectory and future very fast. I'm one of hundreds from MHS. MHS isn't just a school. It's a place that grows people who go back to their communities and strengthen their communities. So I'm asking you to keep supporting MHS, not because of the numbers, but because of what it does for students like me, for Native youth, for all Braves, and for Alaska's future. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Caden. If you guys could stick around for a second, do we have questions? Representative Schwanke?
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you to both of you for being here. And it is difficult to sit there as a teenager in front of a House committee, so you guys did great. I have a question that keeps coming up with boarding schools in my district, Eastern Interior, and some of the variable term boarding opportunities. And that is, we have an increasing substance abuse problem with teenagers. And we have schools now that are taking on students that are coming to them with really severe addictions. And it seems like it has really grown in the last couple decades, ease of opportunity for these students to get a hold of substances. We know more about substances via online opportunities, pharmaceuticals. Can you describe a little bit about your experience just adjusting with people that are coming from a rural community, maybe with an addiction? And is it something that staff is able to deal with?
I'm going to call you Ms. Alana.
Okay. I have friends who, like you say, have addictions, and they've came from those villages where it's like, and there is a nicotine cessation group at Edgecombe run by the state staff, and there's something to deal with that. And there, I believe there's rules like if you turn yourself in, then you won't get in trouble. So there is things that they're doing to help kids with those addictions.
Caden, did you want to add, Mr. Caden?
Oh, could you restate the question?
Through the chair. It's just a kind of a simple, I'm looking for your observations as to when kids do come to Edgecombe with addiction issues and problems, is this something that the staff is able to assist with and help? And it sounds great that you have, support groups. And I'm just kind of curious your perspective on it. Has it gotten worse?
I did have a few friends and do have a few friends that struggle with addiction, and they do have like programs and groups that can help with their addiction. But if you don't turn yourself in and you're caught, there's a lot more disciplinary action involved. Okay. And personally, I think the addiction has gone down, personally, seeing in Boys Maine.
Thank you.
So a really important question I have, I'm not seeing others from the committee, but I want to know more about student mental health. Mm-hmm. What kind of supports are there for you? You don't go home to your family at night, so how are you helped at the school? And that could be anything from opportunities to be with other kids and to do activities to actual mental health counseling. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Alana? There are two wellness counselors at their school, and I find them very helpful to talk to. RAs, if you form relationships with them, they can also, you can talk to them. It's not their job, but like even relationships with teachers, just having that community. I've built really great friendships at Edgecombe that I think help my mental health.
Mr. Caden?
In my personal time, I feel like that there is a lot of opportunities and access to people who can help you with your mental health. Like personally, I've met with a counselor a few times to discuss my personal life, and they seem to be very genuine and caring. And there are a lot of connections that you can form, and all the other students at Munichem are very supportive.
Elena?
Yes, and we are, as you might know, right next to the Search Hospital. So I know kids who can go to therapy there or other things.
And I would just like to say that a lot of students that come to Mount Edgecombe, they come with those problems, and they aren't a product of our school, but they're able to identify those problems because they come to our school and the resources we have available.
And you both are upperclassmen. Has the availability?
I'm a sophomore.
Oh, sorry, sophomore. Sorry, I thought senior, but thank you for clarifying. Can you talk about, I suppose this is probably for Ms. Ilana, has the access to mental health that you know of changed in your time at the school?
In a way, yes. We did have, I don't know her exact credentials, but Ms. Sorokin, she was on upper campus, but then she was transitioned to lower campus, and that changed. We do have Ms. Debbie, and she's registered now, so she's up there as the therapist. But for the time I've been here, we've consistently had the two wellness counselors, and that's the same, but just but they're both male. So the female therapist has changed since I've been there.
Okay, Representative Dybert.
Thank you. Thank you through the co-chair. Good morning. Thank you so much for being here. And as a third grade teacher, it's my other role, I always ask my students what they want to be when they grow up and how Mount Edgecombe is helping you achieve that dream. Thank you through the co-chair.
Thank you. Ms. Ilana?
I want to go into the medical field in a way. And I think that Mount Edgecombe is preparing me, like, with the classes that I take. I have the opportunity to take two science classes this year, chemistry and anatomy and physiology. And, yes.
Mr. Caden. I'm personally interested in pursuing a field of law, and there are a lot of opportunities at Edgecombe for things like this, like debate, mock trial, these different AP classes, and access to all these lawyers and attorneys over in Sitka.
Wow. Okay. We're going to have one more question from Rep. Eischeid, and then we're going to move on so that we can wrap up at 10 till. Representative Eischeid.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hemshoot. Through the co-chair, thank you both for being here. You're doing great. Take deep breaths. Smile. And you're just doing great. My question is, students leave Mount Edgecombe every year. There seems to be a spike this year so far. Students talk. I was a teacher for 25 years. From your perspective, for both of you, why are students leaving this year? What do you hear?
Ms. Ilana?
I do agree that students leave for a lot of personal reasons. We don't know what's happening back home. I know students who have left for things that have happened back home, for mental health. There has been a lot of change this year, which has affected students, but so that's why I think they're leaving. It's change, but also we don't know what's happening back home, and there's a lot of things in Alaska. Mental health is a statewide problem.
Okay. And Mr. Caden?
I feel like the reason for the large amounts of people leaving in the eyes of the media is because this year we've accepted a lot of freshmen, and a lot of these freshmen, I would feel, aren't as academically strong as previous years, and our school really encourages you to excel, and if you can't do that, they're very strict on the lines you're allowed to.
Like, expectations?
Yeah, the expectations.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Okay. Did you want to add something,
yeah,
Ms. Ilana?
Like, for example, at Edgecombe, we don't have D's and F's. We go C to NC, so our for grades, it's like more strict what you can get to pass a class. But I think that is good to help us achieve higher.
And we have many, many leaders across the state who have come from Mount Edgecombe, and that's what we want to make sure is that opportunity is there and that we still get the same kinds of graduates out of the school that we've gotten in the past. So appreciate your time. We're going to move on now to our advisory board member who's online.
Okay.
Thank you. You guys can
Thank you.
Head back. Thanks so much. And so We're going to go to Howard Amos, who sits on the Mount Edgecombe Advisory Board. Mr. Amos, if you could put your name on record, and we have you down as just answering questions, but if you could share with us how long you've been on the board and any information you'd like us to have, we would appreciate that. Thank you for joining us. Good morning.
Okay, good morning, Madam Chair, and the Legislative Committee on DOE. Appreciate being able to speak only over the phone. And I am a graduate of Mount Edgecombe in 1969. I think I'm approaching 57 years of graduation from Mount Edgecombe. I'm a strictly volunteer ASB board member for Mount Edgecombe. I don't get any finances or anything like that. So I'm simply a volunteer. One thing I want to say about Mount Edgecombe is that it provides life skills for students coming out of Mount Edgecombe. I originally came from a village of McCoyac out on Nunavak Island, and the life skills that were given to me during my educational years have provided a lot of assistance for me. I became community leader as city council board chairman, tribal government leader, and I went on to other different areas of business. But that's very important. For example, I took small engines school down in Mount Edgecombe. And when I came home, there are no mechanics, no shops. Everybody has to tend for their own, fixing their snow machines, their outboard motors, et cetera, four-wheelers. And that's very important for me saying something about Mount Edgecombe, because that provided me with a lot of skills that I did not have before going to that school. I understand there's budget shortfalls in most of the schools here in Alaska, and you guys very well know that oil revenues are not as they used to be, and that's going to cause some shortfalls in some funding for the Department of Education. I got to know the Superintendent David Langford last year. I personally met with him during state basketball championships here in Anchorage. And he's a very smart person. I was able to talk to him. I support his position as superintendent. And to top that off, I have a granddaughter attending Mount Edgecombe right now, and she's a junior this year. A lot of times she calls my wife and I, stating that she wants to get out of high school, but I wanted her to go down there because of the education that I received there. There are no technical education being taught in small schools, like being an electrician, plumber, carpenter, etc. And those were taught to me by Mount Edgecombe High School. And I think, I hope they're still doing the same thing, but with this budget shortfalls, I have no clue what's happening. Because I have not traveled down to Mount Edgecombe, even though I'm a volunteer ASB board member, to have meetings down there. So that's the way it goes at this point. During those ASB meetings, the department heads make their reports very thoroughly. I listen intensely for the department heads making the reports on what they're doing for their students. And after hearing that, toward the end of the meeting, those department head reports are approved by the ASB board members. And I think that's important. I know that I've participated in small schools, ASB out in McCoyac, and it's important for the ASB board members to make their approval report of what's going on in the school. And I have met some other board members through Zoom that I have not met before. They're very active. And one of the things that is important now is that we are allowing parents of the students at Mount Edgecombe to be able to make their complaints or whatever you need to say to the ASB board members. And that's very important. They provide important advice to the ASB. So I appreciate that. And I wouldn't support Mount Edgecombe if it were to be in great debt, but understand that we're not getting revenues anymore as we did. So we have to make some adjustments to our budgets, et cetera. So okay. I appreciate your being able to talk to you.
Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Amos, and thank you for your volunteer work on the advisory board. If we could bring Mr. Langford back up and go to slide 22, I think we're all committed to wanting to look forward, and that slide does look forward. So if you could just quickly walk us through slide 22, and then we will wrap up at 10:55. Apologies. Mr. Langford.
Yes. I'm committed to rebuilding the enrollment at Mount Edgecombe, and we've already started accepting applications for last year. when senators and representatives visited last Friday, I told many of them that Mount Edgecombe could easily be at 600 students if we had a new dormitory and we had the space. The reason I say that is because last year we had to turn down about 130 students that had applied, but we don't have the space for them. So the need is there. If we get funding for new buildings, that would be fantastic. I could see Mount Edgecombe really growing. We do need to do better on academic outcomes, and that's why I've been starting to work with the academic staff on every Monday on school improvement and what can we do better, and communicating the message to them that good is not good enough. We have to do something better. We can't just be no worse than any other school in the state. We have to be better than any other school in the state. So we're working towards that. Our aquatic center is up and functioning and doing a very good job, and we're hiring lifeguards that are Mount Edgecombe students, and that's really excellent. There'll be new dormitory roof replacements coming in next summer, finally, and that's been a very big problem. I inherited buildings that were full of leaks and problems, not just this year, but really a decade of unrepair and unfunding projects, or not funding projects. We're already starting curriculum planning for next year, looking at developing student leadership teams. And you met some of the students that I'm working with now in leadership, and plan on having them come back in the fall and train new students how to function at Mount Edgecombe to a much higher degree. We're constantly developing administrative processes to move forward. And so I think the outcome for Mount Edgecombe is very, very bright. And yes, we've had 100 students leave this year, which is slightly higher statistically than normally. But I think we're on a very good trajectory. You know, the food service is always a complaint from students, whether you're any school in the state in food service, but it's especially true for Mount Edgecombe because they eat there three times a day. So we've been working very closely with Nana Corporation to revamp that as fast as possible. And the first when I got there July 1, I really doubted that we could open the school. It was the cafeteria was in such bad shape and disrepair.
We're not going to have time to go into all of that. Okay. So I hope maybe at a future opportunity. I'm curious. Well, I think because we need to wrap up, the condition of the buildings, the legislature has funded a number of different upgrade opportunities, and they have consistently been vetoed. So we are here, and we are here to help you, and we want to support your school.
Great.
But it's going to take all of us to get that done. I wanted to close with the mission of Mount Edgecombe High School. It is to provide a challenging, unique education in a residential setting that values rich cultural diversities and traditions, inspiring Alaskan students to become successful, responsible global citizens. And I take that mission to heart. I also want to point out Alaskan students. So maybe one day we can serve national students, but right now we need to serve Alaskan students. It's in our mission, and we're here to help you get that done. So with that, we are concluding today's meeting. Our next meeting will be on, oh dear, Friday, February 13th. The House, what could go wrong? The House Finance Subcommittee for the Department of Education and Early Development will begin at 8 a.m. and has been scheduled for most of our allotted time. This meeting will be focused on residential school funding within the Department of Education and Early Development's budget. If time allows, we will gavel in for the House Education Committee to hear bills previously heard. As a reminder, the committee's email address is house.education@akledge.gov. Public testimony can be sent to this address. We love hearing from people. With no further business before the committee, thank you for your time today, and we are adjourned at 9:50.